So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the news.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher are here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Before we start the show, I want to say something, Les. I want to say something to my good friend, Missy Hyatt. It's her birthday today. I know you're listening, Missy. Happy birthday.
You and Missy are tight, aren't you?
Yes, we're tight like that.
I'm not even going to take it past that. In fact, maybe that was the wrong phrase. I don't know.
Oh.
I'll tell you, Missy's a crazy lady, but she's a good lady.
Yes. We got a great show coming up tonight. We've got Tracy Brooks from TNA. Ooh, this is going to be the first woman we've had
TNA,
on the show so far.
That's total nonstop action, not whatever all you other.
Yes, and she was also
letting dudes out there think.
She was also on Zombie Beach Party. Ooh.
She was in Zombie Beach Party.
Yes, we're gonna be talking about that too.
Yeah.
Also, Father James Mitchell, also from TNA, Abyss's manager. He's going to be on the show today.
Yeah, I first hooked up with him and Smokey. We'll talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, excellent stuff. So what's been going on last this week with you?
Well, Tulsa last night, CWE's first show, and good show. Tell you the truth, I'm hard-pressed to give you the results blow by blow here. Matt Morgan wiped out a few normal-sized warm bodies. And managed by Jimmy Cornette. We had a lot of fun. Jimmy and I were, it was kind of like OVW and HWA back when we were both, working the developmental thing. Because Morgan and AJ Styles, who were on the card, had first met at the last camp, Dr. Tom, who was also there, and I ran here in Cincinnati at my place.
Cool.
Yeah, and of course, Charlie Haas was there, who spent a year with me and then timed down with Jimmy and OVW. And, Terry Taylor, who I've known since he was a rookie, Matt Stryker from HWA was there, and so we were saying, "Hey, it's like we're just running, one of our things again." But it was Styles, Jimmy Yang, and Petey Williams in the main event. Styles got his hand raised. Stryker wrestled Bordell Walker. My first look at Walker, very nice kid. A lot of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of possibilities. They had a good match.
What does Stryker think about you guys' new book?
He's happy with it. He's on the cover. Why shouldn't he be?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's cool with it. That's
I got my copy of the book since last
week.
Did
you? Well, good.
Yes, it's excellent. I loved it.
Thank you.
Yes, it was very good. I read it. I just sat down and I read it all in one sitting.
Well, good. I'm glad. And now you're a wrestler, right?
No. Yes, now I can be.
Don't say that. We'll talk about that part later. Shark Boy and Delirious, and I forget the third young gentleman's name, had a three-way at Shark, won that. Wardell Walker beat Stryker by DQ. Got my first look at Caprice Coleman, very nice young man. Matt Sydal and Chris Sabin had a very good match. They were on the card. Bill Watts stopped by in the afternoon, and Cornette and I and Terry Taylor and Dr. Tom visited with him.
Excellent.
And, yeah. So we had a great time. And last night, after the show back at the hotel where we stayed, we went in to have some sandwiches, and we watched the last half of TNA with Jerry Lynn and AJ Styles.
Yeah.
And I was teasing Styles. Why would you send my boy Shark out there? And I said, Shark, what are you, Courtney? You could run on Daniels for at least 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that was. We only saw the last half of the show.
Uh-huh.
Maybe not even quite the last half, but anyway, so I didn't get to see the burial thing, which I hear was very good. And but anyway, you know, we had a real good time. We were the promotion took care of everybody, first class accommodations. We were fed at the venue and so forth and so on. But it was, and I think they'll probably do some more stuff after the first year. You know, we'll just keep you posted on that. But I just got back in this afternoon, and had a real good time.
Excellent. Did you hear about, I don't know if you heard about the news then, since you've been gone.
Did I hear about the what?
The news about Friday Night SmackDown.
No, what happened?
Friday Night SmackDown yesterday has announced a new junior division. And when I say junior, I'm talking 5 feet and under.
All right.
Midgets.
Really?
Yes, little people.
Whatever, you know, it's their party. They can play any music they want. You know,
exactly.
I don't have a problem with that. I think the midgets... the little people, the dwarf, you know, whatever the correct terminology. I'm not politically correct at all times, and I'll be the first to admit that. But anyway, there were some great little workers. Pee Wee Lopez,
mm-hmm.
Lord Littlebrook, to name it, Fuzzy Cupid, Little Beaver. They're very entertaining, but they've always been an attraction for the most part.
Right.
So I don't know how, you know, on a weekly basis. And you know what? If they can do that, they can also put together a tag team division and a cruiserweight division.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, no, seriously, you know,
yeah.
I mean, that to me is, you know, like you can't see the leaves of the trees. I think that's good in a lot of ways. But basically, if you let those two divisions kind of stand on their own, and there's enough, obviously, roster talent here to do that, there's your good, solid middle and upper middle card sport on the pay-per-views with their own storylines and angles. And then your top two couple matches kind of take care of themselves. And
right.
You've got a much more solid card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll tell you, in terms of that, this week, the whole thing with Jim Ross has just been a real downer.
Yeah.
Briefly, if I don't know if anybody read my column this week on... Insider, but I've worked with Ross in two capacities. We were co-hosts on Smoky Mountain, and he was head of developmental and talent relations when I was part of the company with WWE as a trainer. And Jim's a class guy, and second best announcer that I've ever seen in my life. And first is Gordon Sully, and as I said in the column, if I said Jim was first, he'd correct me, say no less. Gordon is, you know,
yeah.
Because he was a mentor. Gordon's a mentor to both of us, because Jim and I have talked about that on many occasions. But, again, business is business. If they feel they have to make a change there, I cannot believe that I think that there's any positive to that. You can put a fresher face in that seat, but you can't put what Jim brings to the table in that seat. There's just nobody out there right now that's capable of that. And I think in the spirit of this whole Monday Night War, if that's what it is, or, you know, whatever it is, you're giving the opposition a little spot a little bit, you know. But the other thing is, I business is business, but I just would not have put it into an angle which was demeaning to him in that manner, because he's been, meant so much to that company and in so many ways that we want him to talk about off the air, never mind, you know, as the top commentator in the country or in the world in professional wrestling, but as, you know, as an executive behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a pleasure to work with, and... I would have liked to see him been given a send-off, you know, befitting what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, maybe with a backlash, and what I'm reading, there's quite a bit of that from the fans, that maybe they'll, reverse it. And I would like to, from what I know, and of course there's nothing for sure, right?
Right.
But the firing, release, whatever you want to call it, Jim, in terms of his comment, and then him being admitted to the hospital later, I am told, one had nothing to do with the other. It was not, done and to give him time off. He had, I guess, Jim had some stomach cramps,
uh-huh.
or pains, and decided finally to have it looked at. In fact, it's been reported a lot of places, but he and I exchanged emails on Thursday excuse me, I'm sorry, I sent him an email when I first heard that he'd been admitted to the hospital, I think, which was Wednesday morning or something. And then I got an email back from him on Thursday, and he said, you know, he's hanging in there. And again, it's been reported there was one procedure done this week, this past week, and then this week coming up, and I'm sure of the day, they're doing something, removing some of his intestines.
Man.
And so, and I don't, you know, what is it? I don't know. He didn't say it. I didn't ask, but he said he's trying to hold his head up. He said, and it's been the best, you know, best week he's ever had. And
right.
You know, but the hell of it is, he's a class guy. He always tried to get every, you know, find a middle of the road for the old style guys, the new style, you know, whether it's sports entertainment or wrestling. He always tried to find the middle ground. And he was a guy you could talk to, and he opened up his ears and he listened. And I think more importantly, you know, he just, I think more of us are outspoken of what, whether, you know, but whether he wants to sit down or he doesn't. You know, I said last week, if he's just getting, you know, really strung out and he's deserved, if he really wants to step down, he deserves. I honestly think, you know, he will miss it. And I honestly believe it. It's a mistake.
Yeah, absolutely.
He would not rant like I'm doing about it, even if he disagreed, because he's always been loyal to his employer, and you know, which is a hell of a trade as well. But he's a class guy, and I just feel very privileged that I was able to work with him as well as Gordon, you know,
yeah,
throughout my career. So,
gonna miss old JR.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really will. We've got a lot of good stuff coming on the show. Guess whose turn it is for Hot Topic this week?
Whose turn is it?
It's Brian Alvarez's turn.
Brian Alvarez. All right, we'll hear what Brian's got to say about something.
Brian Alvarez from the Figure Four Weekly Newsletter. He's going to be coming up next for Hot Topic here on Wrestling Weekly. We're going to take a quick break, guys, and we'll be right back after this. Stick around.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly Radio. We suck just a little bit less than everybody else.
You are absolutely right. You do suck.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. It's time for the Hot Topic of the Week. Joining us this week from the Figure Four Weekly Newsletter is Brian Alvarez. Brian, thanks for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me.
Wet but not beaten down, right, Brian?
That's right.
Right, I heard it's been raining nonstop over there.
It always rains here in Seattle, so yeah, it's miserable.
Speaking of miserable, what's the hot topic for wrestling?
The hot topic is pure misery, and that is Jim Ross.
Yes.
The Jim Ross situation. And this is actually what I think happened. I think, and I'm saying this today, this could all change tomorrow depending on what they do on the show, but I think the idea was that they were going to get rid of Jim Ross. And Vince McMahon has been trying to get rid of Jim Ross for a long time. He's replaced him a few times. It never works. Apparently this was his latest try, and he called up Mike Goldberg of UFC and asked him to replace Ross. Actually jumped ship from UFC to Raw on the night of the war a couple of weeks back, which Mike Goldberg did not do. And a lot of people talked to Mike Goldberg and basically talked him out of doing it. And I think at some point between him not accepting the job and Raw this past Monday night, Vince got cold feet. And I think that everything that happened Monday night, I think pretty much everybody involved thought this was really the end for Jim Ross, probably even Jim Ross. But I think that Vince and his close crew did what they did to set up him coming back, and this is all an angle.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly when they published all of that feedback on WWE.com about, we hate this company, why is Jim Ross gone, this is horrible, I'm never going to watch again. I think when they did that, and when they put the information up about his surgery, I think all of that sort of plays into this.
Yeah, I think...
Or do you think that it was right up until they got the backlash with the emails, and then, of course, him coming down sick, because it goes back to, which is not, it's not like I'm telling tales here, but as I recall the story, when they released him back before he came down and worked with us at Smokey, after the Bell's palsy, in a snowstorm, he had to go to the office to be told he was being let go or something.
Yeah, I think that when I watched it, it was so callous, the thing that they did on Monday.
Yeah.
And I mean, it really, as far as something to generate heat, it was brilliant. And I think that it's more likely that it's an angle than Vince McMahon could actually be that much of an evil human being. I think he's an evil human being at times. But this was even beyond him if this was actually the end of Jim Ross. So I think that it was an angle. But I don't necessarily think that anybody else knew that.
I would like to hope that it was. I have my fingers crossed. As I told Doc, I said, you know, you can put another warm body. I don't care what they look like in that seat. But there's nobody at this point in my estimation that can bring to the table what Jim brings.
Well, I don't think there's anybody really.
I don't know. WWE acknowledging and printing the hate mail or negative emails that they've gotten is kind of telling, I think.
Yeah. I mean, by them doing that, it's either more proof that this is all an angle, or it's Vince McMahon saying, well, too bad for you fans. I'm in charge, giving him a big middle finger, and I think that's less of a possibility. I'm not saying that's impossible, believe me, but I think it's less possible that that's what it was than this being the continuation of an angle.
Vince McMahon has made a lot of decisions, and
he makes them all.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's made a lot of decisions that you know, didn't get over well with the audience and stuff like that. And a lot of times I think he has the mentality that the fans are going to get mad for a while, and then they're going to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything will be back to normal. I mean, this could be one of the, you know, one of those instances.
Yeah. I'm not, it's such a weird situation because obviously Jim Ross is not going to be there on Monday. And they're going to have to put somebody else in the booth because Jerry Lawler and the coach are not going to be able to carry that show for 2 hours.
You're right.
And if they do, Vince has totally lost his mind.
Well,
so,
there's no play-by-play guy there, Brian. They're both trying to be color man. And Coach and I, this is not a personal issue, but he's, you know, it's one of those things where he forces being funny, and it's not for the most part.
Yeah, I think they'd actually try and make Coach play-by-play is what I think they would try and do, believe
yeah.
it or not. But they're going to put somebody else in the booth on Monday, I would assume, and, you know, there's always a possibility that Vince will like the guy and not bring Ross back.
Right.
I think there's because, I mean, he's going to have to be out because I don't think he's getting surgery for another week. So,
right.
You know, it's going to be at least a week, then a week after that. So it could be 3 weeks or so that this guy is going to be in the booth. And at the end of 3 weeks, Vince might think, well, the heat has died down. This guy is doing just fine. Let's go with it. So really anything can happen because as Monday showed and the Goldberg thing showed, I mean, Vince will change plans on a moment's notice.
Well, did you see Bite this week?
I haven't yet, no.
Coach was making a lot of negative remarks about Jim Ross and stuff, and to me it seems like it's the beginning of who's going to be the heel commentator and who's going to be the face commentator. And it seems like Jerry Lawler, you know, was sticking up for Ross, and Coach was just putting him down.
May I say, on that subject, having worked that side of the desk as both a play-by-play and a color man, I think today, and I used to think it was just, you know, the entry-level companies or the indie companies who everybody thought that you had to be Bobby Heenan on color.
Right.
You know, and everything you said had to be funny or cutting or you had to be a heel. And
right.
I think, no, I say none of the above. It's not necessary. I truthfully think that that's the problem here. You got two guys. The two guys they're left with are too similar in that particular respect.
Mm. And the other thing about Bobby Heenan is what a standard he set.
Yes.
Bobby Heenan, he has a one-liner for everything. To the point where he never repeats a one-liner, really.
No.
And, you know, you're not going to find many guys like that on the planet Earth, much less in wrestling to do commentary.
No.
So, and Coach is certainly not that person, so... Yeah, he set a high bar.
Well, you know, and the whole thing to me, if this were the Miss America pageant or the Emmys or something, then maybe the cosmetic thing would come into effect. But the same demographic that they're looking at follows pro football, and you know, John Madden is not exactly Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, or if 60 Minutes, which has been on like 150 years, right, Andy Rooney and Ed Bradley are two of the mainstays. So that doesn't hold water, honestly.
Well, you know, somebody mentioned to me that if the deal was that Jim Ross was too old, Why was Linda McMahon the person that got rid of him? Why is Linda McMahon and Vince McMahon the top heel on the show? Why is Ric Flair the Intercontinental Champion? And I think that the best theory that I've heard as to why Vince wanted to get rid of Jim Ross, at least initially, was that Jim Ross moved. And they basically said that when you work for Vince McMahon, you work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You always have to be there. You have to give him 150% all the time. And Vince may have seen Jim Ross moving back home as Jim Ross saying, I'm not giving 100%. Perhaps I'm giving 98%. And he was not happy with this and decided that he had to go. And really, that makes more sense to me than the cosmetic thing, because like you said, I mean, A, it's not the Miss America contest or whatever, Mr. America, and B, even if it was, he's on screen for 30 seconds each show.
Right.
There's not a split screen where you're looking at Jim Ross as he's calling the matches. You never see him.
No, you're right.
So I'm thinking the cosmetic thing was not the actual reason.
No. There seems to be a lot of rumors going around, and I don't want to speculate on that either.
Well, I think this. The deal with Jim moving home is that, to me, if Hogan works a limited schedule, if Taker works a limited schedule, in this capacity, Jim Ross has earned the right to work the same thing.
Yeah, and it's not even like he needs to be in Stanford to work in talent relations. It's not
exactly
even his job anymore.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
He shows up, he does commentary, he does a fine job, and what else really is there that he needs to do?
Right.
So you really have to go to the office?
Well, with the day of the cell phones and computers, that's the thing is your office is with you most of the time.
Yeah, and they just had this big story about how they're teaching Dusty Rhodes to use a computer before they end up having him do booking and such. And I'm thinking, okay, you're going to train Dusty Rhodes to use the Internet, and you're going to make Jim Ross live in Stanford so he can come to the office?
I was teasing Terry Funk about that same thing because when I saw that he had a website and I went on it, and then I was talking to him on the phone last week, and I said, do you remember a few years ago saying something about to me to the effect that I don't trust people who do computers? He said, they have websites. He said, my brother's got one, and I don't trust him. Of course, he was ribbing, right? And I said, now, do you look in the mirror in the morning and say, I don't trust you, SOP, or what?
He may, if it's Terry Funk.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, we want to thank you for being on. We're out of time.
Well, thank you very much.
Brian, it's always a pleasure, and behave yourself.
Yeah.
I will attempt to do so.
All right.
Check out the Figure 4 weekly newsletter, guys, every week.
F4WOnline.com.
Excellent.
Give your broadcast colleagues that coming up after us at 8 o'clock. You guys can tune in to Wrestling Observer Live with Brian and his co-host, Dave Meltzer.
That's right. Well, thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye. Right, thank you, buddy.
All right, this is Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Weekly. We've got Tracy Brooks, James Mitchell coming up next. A lot of good stuff. I can't wait to finally interview James Mitchell. He's been a favorite of mine for
a while.
He's
a good guy.
Yes. Good manager. I need to know the secret to his longevity.
You need to know the secret to his what?
To his longevity.
His longevity.
Yes.
All right. You got a dictionary there in front of you.
Yes. All right. You got me. We're going to take a break, guys. We'll be right back here on Wrestling Weekly. It's Doc Young and Les Thatcher. Don't go anywhere.
We know, you hate this part, but Wrestling Weekly will return after this short break.
Why are you doing this to me?
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. We've got a very special guest on the line right now from TNA. It's Father James Mitchell. James, I want to thank you for being on the show.
Good to be here. How the hell are you?
Doing good.
You know, Doc, reminiscing, going back, it's like when I first met this guy, I saw some talent in him, and then he had a lot of time, and now I got a doc call me tonight and got set up through the show, and he said, we got to get to James right away. He said, he's busy, he's overbooked, and he's just a bad. I said, well, see, when you get to be a star, those are the prices you pay.
Yeah.
I tell you what, Doc, seriously, though, we were just talking before we went on the air. The Sinister Minister had he had the thing. The spark was there, and you could see it when he came to Smokey to work for the first time. But he was given a guy, nice guy, not a lot of talent, with a gimmick that wasn't the greatest gimmick in the world. But, James, you tell him the like it's ashes to ashes, dust to dust, right?
Yeah. I was, in fact, watching some Smoky Mountain last night to catch up on some old history and try to pick you out of it as well, Les, having not seen you in years. And I noticed, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. 12 years ago, I was standing there with a big monster in a mask, and here I am 12 years later doing the same damn thing.
One of the things that endeared James to me, Doc, was, I don't even know how we got on the subject, but anyway, we both are in admiration of Hunter S. Thompson, who just recently passed away. And Jim, when I first, when I heard it, he had passed, I read it in the morning paper, believe me, my first thought was, I said, Jim's going to get fly out there when they blow the ashes out of the can in Colorado itself.
I would have loved to be there. Loved to have been there. Hey, when I was starting off, I used to steal a lot of lines from him, or either take lines and, you know, just kind of tweak them to fit in wrestling. He was an amazing individual and a great voice, you know. He's going to be missed.
Yeah, you know, and that you mentioned it, I'm sitting here, yeah, sure, I notice. You know, with your characters, some of the things that parallel Hunter Thompson. And for the fans listening that don't have never read any Hunter S. Thompson, if you like Sinister, Minister James, or whatever you want to call him, then you would like Hunter Thompson's book because it's a little spaced out too.
Yeah, he's his own drummer, as my characters.
Well, you know, let me ask you. You, to me, in following your career, you know, since we met in Smoky, is you've been in and out of the business, but what I mean by that is not for lack of people wanting you to work, but you've been pretty good in if the spot was there and it wasn't necessarily advantageous, do you still have the karaoke business, which I understand was quite successful?
Yeah, actually I'm on my way to go sing for my supper at a resort right now.
But, I mean, don't you, is that more like an actor picking a part? I mean, it's not so much as somebody says, hey, Jimmy, we need a manager. You say, yeah, well, let me jump right in. But what's the about? What's the story? What's the gimmick? And then you kind of decide, well, is it worth the time and the effort?
Sure, yeah, because, you know, when I was starting out, of course, hell, I guess I started 16 years ago, I would have told you back then I needed to manage the Four Horsemen or something, you know? And I didn't really realize that the key is having the proper fit, you know? And that's something, and as you look at my career over the years, even though sometimes I, you know, was stuck with, in fact, a lot of times I was stuck with gimmick guys that had gimmicks that wouldn't get over, I still made the best of it, and I think I was the best available choice for that kind of thing, you know. I see myself as more in the realm, and again, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm trying to think of managers stylistically that I would have been similar to, probably some sort of cross between maybe like Ernie Roth and maybe really old Gary Hart stuff, you know, the guys who always had the stable, basically, of the big monsters who didn't speak.
Sure. You would have enjoyed Cauliflower Alley this past April. Let's see. There was Percival Friend, Oliver Humperdinck, Percy Pringle, Gary Hart, Ken Ramey.
Wow.
You could have gone out there and just marked right out for the whole bunch, man.
Sure. I think I'm a few years away from being allowed into the to visit the Cauliflower Alley.
Okay. You know, we talk about your dedication to the business, come to think of it. Your time in ECW, you are one of the few people I've met in my 45 years that's ever set himself on fire to prove a point.
Ooh, I did more than set myself on fire. I blew myself up. I blew part of my hand away and blew a big hole in my abdomen. It's about the equivalent of getting shot, is what I was told.
Wow.
Blew up was metal, so, you know, it was kind of like being shot with probably like a 32 or something.
Yeah, I do remember that.
It was a mess, and then I was just crazy enough to, first of all, try to get while I'm sitting in the hospital all morphined up, calling Paul Heyman furiously going, hey, get a camera in here, maybe we can do something with it. and then Paul caught all the heat. You know, everybody thought it was a bad case, so you can blame that on me. But
at the end of the statement, Jim, this is when Ethel Merman comes in with singing The Show Must Go On, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, I figured, you know, if you're gonna get tore up like that, at least get it on camera.
Sure. Good money with it.
Tell me, listen, tell me a little bit about the karaoke business. I mean, how did you get started in that, and what has it evolved into?
Well, actually, what happened was prior to getting into wrestling, I was a big wrestling fan as a kid, but I wound up getting into rock and roll when I was a teenager, right? And
right.
I had delusions of grandeur. I'm going to be a rock star. Well, I sucked. I looked really cool. I looked like a little David Lee Roth, but believe it or not, I was 100 pounds lighter and had a head to laugh. But I really wanted to be a singer, and I found out over time, you know, I was really just stealing a lot of my onstage patter from the old heels that I grew up watching on wrestling. Long story short, that evolved into me giving up rock and roll dreams and trying to get into wrestling. Gave up music for a long time, and when ECW took a dump, and I used to do karaoke, you know, just for fun, go out with the boys and get liquored up after the shows. Actually, Chris Canyon, said, hey, why don't you start a karaoke company? I was like, nah, there's no money in it. I don't want to do that. You know, yeah. The hell with that, you know. And I was starting to get kind of desperate because what money I had made in the wrestling business went all to hell after being unemployed for about a year. And Canyon loaned me the money to start this thing up. And I had no idea how it would go. And, bro, I mean, I make great money. I make great
really?
Money. And the thing is, in having to do it, I had to become a better singer. So, actually, I'm pretty damn decent now. But the hook to it is, of course, here's this guy who looks like the Prince of Darkness singing all these damn Rat Pack kind of songs, you know? So I get there and people look at me and expect to hear death metal or something, you know? And I crank up Johnny Mathis and they don't know what the hell to do with it. But so it's really been been good because I got it from zero to a pretty good living in 3 months, and then I've been consistently. I'll tell you what, I talked to my friends in WWE. And I don't mean like your very top tier guys,
right.
But I make more money in with essentially what comes out to a part time job than guys who are on the road 5 days a week with WWE.
Mm. All right.
And
wow.
I have done
that. That's made it easy where we talked earlier about you being able to pick and choose and seemingly
yeah.
pick the right things. It's made that possible for you too, right?
Right. And see, that's why I don't do indies. Guys will pay me. I got a job and make $100 an hour, right?
Right.
So people will call me. And they'll go, hey, we need you to do a show. And they either, first thing you got to do is pay me enough to cancel the gig. That's just to cancel it. And then there's the misery factor of, okay, now I got to go on the road. You know, and how much are the travel days going to eat up? Like a guy called me, wanted me to go to England. Well, when I gave him the price that where I had to factor in basically losing 3 days of my day gig, they couldn't believe it because, frankly, my asking price has to be more than most wrestlers on the indie circuit, which is why I don't do them. Nobody's going to meet her. You know, some guy want me to go to overseas for the equivalent of like $150 a day. I'm like, you're out of your mind.
Right.
You know, it's not like I'm a guy who works at the 7-Eleven who makes $8 an hour, so if you offer me a $150, $200 payday, I'm going to jump at the chance.
Mm.
You know, it's just not worth it. So usually if I do an indie show, I am losing money to do it. But it's because I have picked it because it's something that's going to have the proper exposure or, you know, have a certain something that I'm going to get something out of it personally. Like, say, were Ed Farhat, the original Sheik, still alive and still wrestling, I would have lost money just to be a mark to go manage him. You know what I mean? But let's just put that feather in my cap before I die. But by and large, I just don't do them because, you know, people can't afford me, and that's not me trying to be arrogant. That's not saying I'm worth more than Jim Cornette on the indie scene or something like that. It's because I'm not going to pay you to work for you, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's good. You mentioned Chris Canyon, and now I remember that I think Chris, first time I met Chris was he came to Smokey.
Yeah, I brought him in. Brought him in.
Exactly. Now, were you guys buddies before you got in wrestling?
Yeah, we were. I guess around that time I'd probably known him maybe a year and a half, 2 years at that point.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, we were buddies, and he was real green at the time. I think he'd wrestled maybe 3 or 4 matches at the time I met him. And you could look at him, and it's again like I was talking about myself in Smokey days, you could look at him and tell, this guy's got it. He just doesn't know how to do it right. I had to teach the guy how to lock up. And if you've got my fat ass trying to teach you how to lock up, something's wrong. You know? So, but you could tell he had it, and he's one of my dearest friends, and he's a guy that I think has not gotten the credit and really do the respect that I think he deserves, because he's a really innovative, really hardworking guy, and he's very, very passionate about the business. And I think that's one of the reasons, you know, he'll kind of drop out of sight for a long time, because, you know, it's pretty painful for him to not be able to achieve the kind of success that he'd like. I mean, it's that way probably with most entertainers of any sort, you know. But,
yeah, well, you know, I think it's like, you know, I don't care what level you're a football, pro football player, pro basketball player, the fact that you're drafted and you're making good living would satisfy a lot of people. But obviously you've arrived at that level because one of the traits in your makeup is that you're tremendously competitive. And So no matter what you're making, you don't want to sit on the bench and watch other people perform.
Sure, that drove me crazy. I was with WCW for 3 years, and the first year I was there, you know, we were basically maybe bottom of the middle or top of the middle guys, and featured. We were on TV, but, you know, we got jobbed out just about every week after the little run with Glacier ran. And I didn't care because I was at least being featured, and even though we lost, we got to do some fun stuff and make a good living doing it. What drove me nuts was sitting on my ass for 2 years at home, and I was getting that mailbox money, you know, and most people probably cut off their arm to make that kind of money to do nothing,
yeah. You
know. But it drove me insane, you know. They wouldn't answer your calls, and pretty much I was being told, just shut up, don't let them know you're on the payroll, or you're going to get fired. You know, and being a performer, I mean, the reason you get it, most anybody gets into any kind of entertainment, is because they've got what Jerry Lewis, the comedian, used to call the disease of look at me. You know,
right.
We're looking, we want to perform, we're looking for approval, you know, and sitting home, you could pay me $1 million a year to do nothing, and I'd still have the itch to want to get out and perform, and that's how it is with most people, you know, you want to do well.
Absolutely. I when kids used to come to me to train, you know, and try to give all these reasons they were there, and I said, well, basically, as silly as it sounds, we're all here because we want to get half naked and perform in front of a few thousand people.
Sure. That's what it reduces down to.
Why else would we be busting our humps like this and bruised up and banged up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And especially these guys on the indie circuit. My God. I mean, and I have so much admiration for the guys that go out in front of a crowd of 50 or 75 people and who have the work ethic to say, you know what, these people bought a ticket, and I'm not just going to go, okay, it's a night off and work a headlock for 40 minutes, you know.
Right.
You'll get somebody like Sabu, say, for example, who go out there and do the same crazy stuff and risk breaking his neck the same way he does in front of a packed house, you know, and that's the kind of, I admire that dedication of people.
You know, look, watching Sabu on TNA last night, I was just thinking to myself, I didn't even bring it up to people with me, but I'm thinking, Jesus, you know, Terry has put himself through so much, his body, and is it just, it's been, it was out, what, almost a year with illness and, you know, one thing and another, and there he is, man, just bumping his behind off, and it's not about the money, it's about the love of what he does.
Sure, and I mean, to me, I'm really amazed that after pretty much being at death's door, you know, for what, 6 months, basically totally incapacitated, I wasn't sure that the guy would be able to come back, and I have so much respect for him. The fact that he's come back, he's as good, if not better, than he's ever been, you know, and, you know, most people, I think, would probably tend to want to tone it down at that point. But, you know, it's like he's back and he's got something to prove, and he's really to be applauded for that.
Yeah, you're right.
I got to ask you something about the funeral home skit last night.
Yes.
What the heck?
I'm going to have to watch that Monday. I didn't get to see it. We were still at our show when that aired last night. We saw the last half of the show, but I'm interested. I've heard such a buzz about it. Were you one of the designers or creators of this particular segment?
No, I mean, the only thing I was told that, hey, you're going to be in on a funeral segment, America's Most Wanted, and Jeff Jarrett. Now, my first reaction was, why in the hell would I do that? Because, you know, we have nothing to do with that angle. Why am I involved?
Right.
So pretty much, it was that all the heels, you know, all the
right.
heels were there just to kind of, you know, mock AFW. But no, they told me to have a sermon ready, So, or a eulogy. So I worked up about 3 minutes of material when I got there, and I was under the impression that it was going to be one big long thing with me, with just sitting in the crowd, you know, like a static shot. But that was not the case. And it, you know, it turned out to be some funny stuff. It was they still had me deliver the eulogy, and frankly, I'm probably the best person in the company to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I have that sense of rhythm and drama, you know, in my delivery.
Do you marry heels too, Jim? I mean, sure. I mean, you wouldn't do that for baby faces because it'd be you like say for example, if one of the heels wanted to get married, do you take care of the ceremony?
Sure, absolutely.
Sure.
But,
if you don't have to take off karaoke, or if they'll pay you $100 an hour.
Yeah.
The people in the chat room are calling that skit gold.
Yeah, well, you know, I wasn't sure how it was going to come off. I was really a little uncomfortable about it because, now, like, you know, like James Storm, he's been known to be a little silly. The Team Canada guys are kind of silly. And personally, I didn't know how it would come off with me and Abyss being in there because I don't think that is a character that needs to do ha-ha stuff at all.
Mm.
I didn't want to break character and be silly, which I didn't. But I wasn't sure how it would be perceived. And when they played it in the studio at Orlando for the live crowd, that was the litmus test, and the crowd went berserk. They laughed through it, and I looked at America's Most Wanted, and I said, uh-oh, you guys are baby faces now. You know, all the heels baby face. Had a great reaction from the crowd, and so far, what little I've read about it, they liked. And they filmed it differently, too. It was actually kind of filmed like a movie, and it, you know, they did all kinds of different overhead angles, and they reshot things over and over again so they could chop it together the way they did. And Jeremy Borash really busted his ass overnight to get that thing put together because there was a lot that he had to edit down, and then, like, Spike wanted it shorter, and I think he did a good job of putting it together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe we'll see more of that stuff.
You know.
And it also establishes, you know, in the time constraints we had on Spike, it gave us a chance to establish some personalities more so than we normally do, too. You know?
Yeah. True.
You know, there's always so much written and talked about the WWF or WWE writers, you know, scripting everybody's promos. And of course, the joke is that they script Flair or, you know, or Mick Foley or something like that. It's insane. But
right.
But then you, I mean, what little I've worked with you, but I've seen your work. I know you've got a good creative streak in you too. Now, in TNA, do they just give you a shell or an outline or bullet points and you create for yourself, or is there a combination of the two? What?
Well, when I first went to TNA, when they started, they tried to give me scripts, and I still didn't follow them. I followed them slightly and tweaked the hell out of them.
Right.
And then it got to where, and you know, I guess I was kind of a pain in the ass because I was constantly changing things. Now, instead of trying to write a promo for me, they give me like 4 bullet points. So, for example, if they were to say, okay, Mitchell says Abyss is going to beat Jeff Jarrett for the title. He doesn't care when, where, or in the cage or something, right?
Right.
Then I have 2 minutes. You know, I take that 5 seconds and I make it mine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think the guys in WWE screw up. They're like, I can do a Dusty Rhodes impersonation, right?
Right.
But, and so I could sit there and I could write down every Dustyism there is, right? That's right, baby. I'm the American Dream, son of a plumber, blah, 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 and Triple H, so I'm going to do this to you. And I hand it to Dusty, and I guarantee you Dusty would go, devil number two, just go sit down, let the Dream do it his way. And, you know, because the deal is, make a promo good, is somebody has to really inject themselves into it. I don't think you can truly write an effective promo for somebody else. You couldn't write a promo for Jim Cornette. You know, you could give him all kinds of great lines, but it still wouldn't be his. And I think that the people who come across best on television are the ones, and I don't mean going into business for themselves and, you know, defiantly,
right,
you know, against what's given to them, but I think a guy who really can talk just needs the bullet point. And TNA has been good enough and feel confident enough in me now where that's pretty much all they do.
Mm-hmm.
I get like
that's
one
great
sentence that says, Mitchell says Abyss is going to kick Monty Brown's ass or something, and he'll meet him at Unbreakable or something, and that's all I need, and I fill it in from there. And then I tweak it with my own quirky little way of phrasing things, you know?
Yeah.
Make it uniquely mine. Kind of like giving Joe Cocker a little help from my friends by the Beatles, you know?
Yeah.
It's a totally different monster when he's done with it, you know?
Mm. Well, you know, that's, to me, it's, for anybody that, you know, comes across with a good promo, to try to put the words in their mouth, I think is crazy because, different words, your tongue wrapped around them differently, you know?
Yeah.
And I can say it, we both say the same thing, but we can't say it the same way.
Sure. And that's one of the things that I think, again, I mean, I hate to be sitting there and just constantly dumping on the competition, but I think there's not as much, a lot of the guys who aren't your top-tier guys, like Taker or Rock, you know, who have very definable personalities, most of them run together now, you know, because you got the same people writing word for word what you're supposed to say, you know, so it's pretty much the same voice over and over again. You're
right.
Written the same voice, you know? And I would rather have somebody be silent and mysterious than to let them open their mouth and remove all doubt. So, you know, I'll give you an example of a guy who hasn't spoken on TV yet who I think has a great innate charisma, Samoa Joe.
Yeah.
I saw that guy on an ROH. I'd never seen him wrestle, and I did a shoot interview for Gabe Sapolsky up there back in the summer under the spring, and he gave me some Ring of Honor stuff, and I'd been hearing this buzz about Samoa Joe, and I watched him. He's in the ring with Steve Corino, Carino's just berating him for like 5 minutes on the microphone. You know, and Carino's a great talker, and he's witty and glib, and he's just doing all his Carinoisms. And Samoa Joe replied with like 5 words. I don't remember what they were, but he was so innately charismatic that it blew away what Carino did.
Right.
You know, and there aren't many people that can pull that off. And you know, I think if say somebody like Samoa Joe went up to New York, you know, they'd probably give him a 3-page script, and it would diminish his innate charisma. You know.
Yeah, and the beautiful thing with Joe is for the years, age-wise, and the time he's been in the business, he's very mature and mentally about the business. And, not the fact that he's such a good hand in the ring. I was telling Jerry Lynn and Terry Taylor last night, I said, to me, this is the guy that's going to be the bust out here in the next year or so. I envision him and Monty Brown doing a hell of a program somewhere down the road.
Yep, and, you know, Samoa Joe comes off as a legitimate wrestler. I mean, more old school, you know?
Yeah.
He'll grab a hold. He'll grab a submission. I mean, he can do all that high-flying, crazy, fast stuff, which is amazing for a guy that big. But he's got it, you know? He really has it. And one of the things I like about TNA is that's a place that would take him and say, okay, we're going to let you do your thing, instead of taking him to another promotion and saying, you're the garbage man, you know, and screwing with his gimmick, you know?
Let me ask you, with all the different guys you've managed and worked with during your career, which guy did you feel the most comfortable with, or the two of you had the best chemistry, you think?
Well, Canyon and I had a really good chemistry, and that's probably the best actual ringside work I did.
Right.
Because he always had a way for me to get involved, and it wasn't the same old manager spots over and over again. That was a lot of fun, but frankly, I think Abyss is the feather in my cap. I think we play off of each other well, and that's only getting better as we get used to each other.
Yeah.
But it's just the perfect fit, and he is a big, creepy monster, which fits in with me, but his work is amazing. You don't see a guy that big that can have a 5-star match.
He sells well for a guy his size, too.
Yeah, and I mean, he can go. And he also, he understands how to play a monster better than most. Like Malice, may he rest in peace, Jerry the Wall.
Right,
to it.
He was brought in as a monster, but he never got it. You know, he didn't
know
how to move like a monster, and he sold too much. And again, I don't mean to be dumping on him because he was the sweetest guy on earth, but he didn't get it that, you know, his role was the big monster, and there's a certain way you sell and a certain way you work, and Malice understands it. I mean, you got to, not Malice, I'm sorry, I mean Abyss, you know, there's a certain way to sell. You know, watch Frankenstein, you know, watch, there's a certain way a big guy has to sell, and, because, you know, you don't want to oversell and then look like a weakling, you know?
Right.
But he, Probably, really, I'd say probably Abyss. I'm really excited about it. I think this is what I'm going to, this will be what I'm looking for.
Good.
What do you say to the fans who compare Abyss to Kane and call him TNA's version of Kane?
Well, that's, he's of that lineage in the same way that Superstar Graham, Ric Flair, and Buddy Rogers were of the, like, the Gorgeous George kind of lineage,
mm-hmm.
you know, tweaked over time. But one thing, we've never really explained Abyss's story yet, and as I recall, Undertaker was just a dead man, and let's see, Kane's story was he killed his parents, right, and burned himself up in a fire. Wasn't that pretty much his backstory?
Yeah,
right.
I don't think he's a ripoff of them at all. You know, I don't think he portrays himself in that way. Some similarities to the Mask, kind of, sort of, but he's a different character altogether,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, hey, every promotion needs a monster.
Exactly.
Every promotion needs the Minister James Mitchell.
You know, the other thing, if he was such a ripoff, right, they certainly had plans to bring him in up there, you know?
Yeah.
I know they did, you know? And he was going to be Abyss and look the same. So had he gone there, he'd be the same guy you see on TV now.
That's a good point.
I tell you what, to me, I'm not even working anymore, but I just, for the industry itself and the boys, the fact that the TNA's beginning to make a dent, you know, and I'm not, I want everybody to prosper because it's good for the boys, but I think that the competition is good, and the good thing is that, like anything else where there's competition, it helps the boys with their payoffs, and that's not a barbaric thing, as you know, it's, you know, you're...
Sure.
It's your body can go down any time, and you need to make it while you can.
Yeah, I mean, the healthiest that I remember the business being when I was in it was during that whole era of, like, 96 to, say, 2001.
Yeah.
You know, there were three companies that all had their audience. They're all doing strong, going strong, and the business suffered when there wasn't competition. You know, I mean, it would be in WWE's best interest, creatively and otherwise, to have competition, you know, to light a fire under their ass.
Yeah.
Same thing with us, you know, it makes, in not just in wrestling, in anything, competition ultimately turns out a better product for the consumer.
If you know you have to follow a match or possibly if it's a match with a manager in it before, kicks in your sense of competitiveness and it makes you actually a better performer yourself?
Sure, and not in the way, you know, like, I mean, there's wrestlers in every locker room, you know, that bitch
right.
and moan and complain, and they're envious, you know, so they look at it different. To me, like, when you'd have a guy like Don Callis on
yeah.
the show,
mm-hmm.
it made me really have to step my game up. You know, I couldn't
right.
get complacent and go, well, by default, I'm going to be the best talker tonight, you know, so I could... And that would eventually happen, probably, if it was just phoning it in every night because there was no competition. Like you said, having somebody out there makes me better. It makes whoever I'm managing better. When, oh, my God, we've got to follow AJ Styles and Samoa Joe match. You know, you've got to turn it up.
Sure, absolutely.
Absolutely better.
Your big Monsters Ball match is coming up. Can you explain what Monsters Ball is like, the concept of the match?
My understanding of it is, I'll understand it better once I've been in one, it's pretty much anything goes, all four men in the ring at the same falls count anywhere, you can have weapons, whatever, and the dramatic stipulation left to it, attached to it, is that the guys are left in a room with no light, food, or water for 24 hours, and... I guess they're supposed to be diminished by the time on some level when they get to the ring.
Yeah, it sounds like me on a Sunday.
Yeah. That's all I know about it. I wasn't in the one last year, so it's going to be a new experience for me to see how this plays.
Excellent. Now, being a manager, who is your favorite manager?
Growing up
yeah.
as a kid, and I grew up watching the Mid-Atlantic, Florida, and Georgia stuff from, say, like 74 on. The managers we had then that I saw, I guess, like Boris Malenko was really good. He was one of the best damn
yeah.
of all time. And one of the things he said that to this day I follow is, if everybody else is screaming, you whisper. If everybody else whispers, you scream. You know, be different.
Yeah.
He was one. Gary Hart, old Gary Hart, when he was like at war with Dusty's Army in Georgia, same thing. But, you know, I really didn't, until I started really trying to get into the business, I wasn't a manager connoisseur. When I started, everybody thought I was a derivative of Cornette Paulie, which I consciously tried not to be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I really didn't study them, so if I came off as them, it wasn't because I was trying to imitate them. It's probably just because I was a fast-talking southerner in the case of Cornette, the fact that I had a ponytail in the case of Paulie, and had kind of an abrasive voice. But when I looked, and, you know, my studying down the, through the years, when I got really serious and studied tapes and stuff when I first got in, to me, the biggest influences really would probably be Ernie Roth, the Grand Wizard, Abdullah Farouk, whatever you want to call him, and Bobby Heenan. I think Bobby Heenan was probably the best overall, period, in terms of just technically being a manager and doing it all. Bobby Heenan was probably the best. Cornette, a very, very close second. But sentimentally, my favorite's like Ernie Roth.
You know, having worked with both,
character.
Having worked with both Roth and Cornette parallel each other in the fact that not only are they good managers, but both of them have real fertile minds for storylines and angles and can come up with finishes. Like Ernie was good at that stuff too.
He was colorful. That, you know, there aren't many of us left. You know, I go out on indie shows when I see indie shows from time to time or tapes of them. And one of the problems is because there are no managers really around to help. I mean, like, I would love to have a Cornette or a Heenan in the locker room, you know, that I could go to and ask things, you know, and I don't have that anymore, you
right.
know. So when you see, like, managers now, they don't get it because they don't have anybody to learn from. So you get guys who go out there and spend 10 minutes on the microphone, put themselves over, and they don't put the talent over because they don't get it, you know. They don't understand the subtleties. And that's just one of the things that I miss about it, you know. Wrestlers often have, like, agents and whatnot they can call on, you know, to give them some of the finer points. Those of us who are left managing really don't have that, you know.
Yeah. James from Inverness has a question in the chat room. He said, do you think that there should be more of a role for managers in mainstream pro wrestling?
Sure. And you know what? That, if you had good managers, it fixes a lot of problems automatically. People who don't have personalities, and if you think about it, when McMahon Sr. back in the day would bring in the new heel of the, you know, basically brought in a top heel every 4 months, I think was how it worked, you know, to run the cycle at the Garden and the Spectrum, to do the up until the blow-off match. They had guys in there that couldn't talk. I mean, Stan Hansen couldn't talk when he came in. He was green, you know, Bruiser Brody, all the same. But the manager kept the heat, you know, and the manager was a guy who basically never got touched. You know, you kept the heat on him, and anybody who was put with him automatically got that heat rub, you know. And they were the mouthpiece for people who otherwise couldn't do it. Bobby Heenan, one of just the greatest in-ring performers there was, and no disrespect to him, he wasn't a compelling interview. Cornette fixed all that, you know, and did it in such a way that it didn't detract from Bobby Heenan, you know. And you could go a long way if you had guys who knew what they were doing in there, that knew how to get talent over. And then as the guys get more confident over time, you start letting them get a few words in and then a few sentences. And then eventually, to me, if you're really doing your job as a manager, you can get to where your guy, you know, you can step back, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you're the background piece while he's cutting the promo, you know. But
do you think these promos, doing promos and things like that, is something that can be taught, or is it something that you just have to have? Uh-oh.
Hello?
I think we lost him.
Did we lose him?
Yeah. All right.
I was going to say I didn't think he was stumped for an answer.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with more with Father James Mitchell right after this.
Welcome to a new way to communicate. A new source of news, information, and computer software. Introducing American Online.
Hey, with American Online, I can just point and click.
Oh, wait. With American Online, you can send and receive email, even across the Internet.
Hey, I've got email. Okay, I open the mailbox. No, that's not it. No.
American Online puts you in touch with information resources all across the country.
How do you get this thing... Open! Application in use. What application? I can't even start any applications.
Call now for your free trial. You'll get free software and 10 hours of free online time your first month, which you can spend trying to figure out how to open your email box.
Second timed out? What does that mean? Jesus, I hate this thing.
American Online. It's knowledge. It's power.
It sucks!
Call the Psychic Buddies now and be prepared to be shocked and amazed.
My psychic told me that I was a crack addict. How did she know?
Our specially trained psychics are here to help you 24 hours a day.
My psychic knew that I liked to beat my wife. She even knew that I always hit her in the back of the head so I didn't leave any bruises. I was blown away.
The Psychic Buddies know. Call now for a reading you'll never forget.
My psychic told me that I like to dress up in women's clothes. Only my mama knew that.
Call the Psychic Buddies at 1-800-YOUR-BUDDY and find out how to get unlimited free minutes. First 30 seconds free on unlimited calls. The Psychic Buddies want to be your buddies, and they also want $11.99 per minute. Call now.
There's the latest news and information on Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip. It's just one click away. Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, the best of Raven, Enigma, the best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, the best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
Doc Young, Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Got James Mitchell back on the line, and James, we were speaking about promos.
Yeah, we were talking about his managers, and the point I was going to make before my phone crapped out was that if you had managers who could get out there and talk, they could help elevate the talent that is gifted in-ring, but not in terms of charisma. And I think one of the problems that happened was when the trend turned to all women, as, you know, LA's replaced managers.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, with the a few small rare exceptions, women couldn't do it. And I'm not trying to be a chauvinist or anything, but that most of them were not compelling talkers.
You're
you
right.
know, so I don't think that really helped. I mean, once you got done looking at the TNA, there was nothing there to further. In fact, it really all the focus would wind up being on the woman, you know. So that's definitely a place. You got any more questions in the chat room?
Yes, they actually asked if you thought that managers would get sex changes to fit into the modern-day role.
You know
Speaking
what?
Of that.
I called Cornette back, I think it was like 95 or 96 when he was up there in the office, and he said, unless you grow some breasts, there's not a place for you.
Yeah, it seems to be that way. Seems to be the trend. Which I love the managers, you know. I miss the managers so much.
Well, like Jim's saying, they can cover a multitude of sins. You can have a guy that's that can communicate with his body language and his facials, but can't cut a good solid promo.
Mm-hmm.
And the manager's good for that. And I mean, there's if a guy is just getting his feet on solid ground as far as his in ring work. Some of those mistakes can be detracted from by the manager picking up the audience's attention.
Right,
they come in handy for a lot of things. I mean,
and you know another example where like J.J. Dillon, who had been a wrestler, came in handy when usually your managers were your older veterans, and there was like an incident, and I forget which show it was that Crockett ran, where I think it was Lex Luger and Tully Blanchard maybe were taking on the Armstrongs in some kind of tournament. Lex totally forgot his spot, you know, and J.J. Dillon actually ran up and did the spot with Arn or Tully or whoever it was that Lex was supposed to do. He was green and clueless, you know, and he was just kind of standing around going, duh. And JJ was smart enough to go, screw it, the show's got to go on.
Right.
That's the spot. You know?
Agent Orms wants to know who you think the most underrated wrestler is today.
Today? Well, it depends on how you define underrated. You know, like, to me, guys like Benoit and Guerrero or like AJ, I think probably haven't gotten their due because they're dismissed as being too small or not having charisma, you know.
Mm.
But with the boys themselves all believe, you know, because they do it for a living, they respect and understand what the guys do. But again, it all depends on how you define it. But I'm not sure, but I would say it would still probably come down to those guys who I think should be given, wrestlers of that caliber that should be given the ball but are kept down for stupid reasons.
Yeah.
And it would apply to those kind of guys.
Yeah.
Because there's several of them.
TNA fan wants to know what you think of the Oh Abyss chants, and does it hurt the character?
It's kind of hard to get regular heat now. Mm-hmm. You'd almost have to go out and dress like Osama bin Laden to get heat.
Right.
What I've noticed is the more reprehensible you are in the ring, the more they cheer you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I haven't quite figured out how to work around it. I think the crowd kind of dictates whether you're a babyface or a heel, regardless of what you do. You know, and in general, people who come off playing howdy doody and, you know, apple pie and a glass of milk kind of guys, they get booed. You know, it's and I do miss it. I actually preferred the days when there were black hats and white hats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I don't think it hurts the character because we don't acknowledge it. You know, if he turned around and went, yeah, and I started leading them in a chorus of it, I think that would hurt it. But as it is, you know, we're just oblivious to it.
Mm-hmm.
And hell, any noise is better than no noise.
Do you think that you might add more people to your stable wrestlers? A lot of TNA talent could use you, as far as TNA fan is concerned, in the chat room.
I wouldn't want to do it right now, because right now I want to establish Abyss. I want to be able to tell his story, to give his background, and have him as fully developed as possible before taking anybody else on and having to spread my energies.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, and you know, then perhaps once he's fully established, then maybe taking on somebody else, but I wouldn't want to do it right now. But it's not out of the question.
Well, we know that you got to get going, and you got another job to do.
Yeah, I got to go sing for my supper.
And I appreciate you staying on a little bit longer than we planned.
Hey, Les, I wanted to ask you before I go. Yes. Do you still have the groovy gold LeMay Elvis jackets I used to see you wear when you were localized promos for Crockett?
If I do, they're buried in mothballs.
I'm not imagining that, right? Didn't you have, like, gold LeMay or something?
No, I never had any gold LeMay jackets. I tell you what, I did have, in the 70s, the velvet blazers were in, and I had a forest green one, I had a blue one,
I seem to recall you just having some really outlandish colors back in the day.
Well,
for some reason,
was,
I was thinking of. Excuse me.
If what was the movie about? The Anchorman.
Oh, Ron Burgundy.
Ron Burgundy.
Yeah. Exactly. That was the mode of dress that everybody at that point.
Yeah.
The spread collar shirts with a chain. Yeah, exactly. Three-piece.
When I was trying to remember you from back when I was a kid, the thing that popped in my mind was an image of you wearing one of those. Do you remember that old Elvis album where it was like gold LeMay or something, some sparkly thing, and it was like 1 million wrestling Elvis fans can't be wrong.
When I first broke into business, the only sequins I ever had was on some of my ring jackets and stuff.
Right.
But I was maybe flamboyant. Gaudy wouldn't be the word. Flamboyant. I'll tell you a quick. I was telling a story to somebody just yesterday, talking about the mode of dress at that time.
and it was meant as a joke, obviously, for any listeners who of that this particular region. Well, you would be one, Jim, but it was Jack Briscoe and Jimmy Crockett Jr. and I were having a conversation, and Jack had mentioned, well, Jim, you know, I've been seeing some of the shows. Les doing a real good job for you. This is when Jack was a champ, and he was just, you know, in the territory for a short period of time. And Jimmy said, yeah, he said, Les does a good job for us. He said, you know, I just wish I could get him to wear a tie. Well, in truth, I you know, I hate to have a thing. When I used to have to wear them, if we went to commercial, I'd pull the knot down until we get ready to come back from commercial. But anyway, so Jack says, what do you mean? Why does he have to wear a tie? And he said, well, you know, I don't know if our core audience can identify with the spread collars and the chains. And Jack said, well, if you want your core audience to identify, tell them to wear some bib overalls.
Yeah.
All right, well, guys, I've got to scoot. I appreciate you having me on, and everybody be sure to check out the pay-per-view on the 23rd, I believe.
Yes, exactly. Jimmy, congratulations on the deal, and I hope you and Abyss work it out. Chris has come a long way. And,
yeah, long way from Prince Justice.
Yes. And down several pounds.
Yeah, about 100.
Yes, exactly. But good luck to you guys. Man, if you're up this way, give me a shout and let's do lunch or something.
You got it. All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Be well. You take care.
Bye, Jim. All right, that's James Mitchell, Father James Mitchell from TNA here on Wrestling Weekly. Les, we went over time, man.
Well,
we might as well just go straight to the Tracy Brooks interview.
Well, let's do that then.
Let's
from
do
the
that.
Beast to the Beast of the Beauty or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast.
Gotcha.
We're going to take a quick break, guys, and we'll be back with Tracy Brooks right after this. It's our featured guest this week on Wrestling Weekly.
Wrestling Weekly will return to all the fun right after this.
What are you doing? You having fun?
I'm having a blast.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Got our featured guest online and right on time. Tracy Brooks from TNA. Tracy, thanks for being on Wrestling Weekly.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you know, she's a star and a woman both, and she's on time, Doc, so that says something.
Yes.
About her work ethic. I got to tell you, Doc, I was almost the lucky guy that got her to come to my training school.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. But what was it, work visa you couldn't get squared away?
Yeah, I'm Canadian, so for me to get to the States and stuff, it was kind of a hard time, and to get a job and stuff, I wouldn't have been able to. So actually, Les was the very first package I sent stuff out to, and I should have went. I always regret it, but things happen for a reason, I guess. But I still got to meet Les, and so I guess it all works out in the end.
Yeah.
You know, she did, what is it, is it Sunday that the Toronto paper does, what do they call that section that you were in a couple of times?
Actually, it's the Sunshine Girl. They do it every single day. It used to be on page 3, but I think they put it on the back of the paper now. But the girls could submit their pictures and basically just tell them about yourself. And I won a calendar contest that put me in the Sun.
Cool.
So that's how I just kind of used it to my advantage, saying that I wanted to be a wrestler, and things kind of took off from there.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of neat.
Go ahead.
Oh,
but
nice.
I researched lots of school, and he was the very first promo package I sent out to, and he so kindly called me back, and it's just, unfortunately, I was Canadian, and it's one of those things.
Oh.
Yeah.
Doc, you've been... right, when she sent me pictures down, you know, and everything, and I said, wow. I said, if we could, you know, she looks good, and if we can get her, teach her to work, we got to keep her.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, Tracy, because I think the last time you and I talked, you weren't getting a lot of ring time.
No. Sorry, go on.
Are you getting more now? I mean, you get more chance to train and stuff?
Actually, no. Indies have really gone down. I don't know if they've gone down for a lot of people or just, it just seems like the Indies have gone downhill right now. It went from me being booked for past 2 years every single weekend to doing matches and managing and stuff, and so now it's hard to find indie bookings without someone canceling the show or them not paying you or whatever, how it happens these days. So it's kind of frustrating right now, but I actually got to go back home to Toronto and I trained a little bit, but it was good. it was good for me to get back in the ring, but still working on the working part.
You're still actively training right now, aren't you?
I still do whenever I try to get in the ring early. I mean, if I get to a show, I try to get to a show early, try to get in the ring and watch my tapes and work on stuff. And we actually have a boxing ring at our gym, and ODB and I used to just do some chain wrestling and that and stuff. And whenever I get the chance to, it's kind of hard at TNA because it's kind of you get there and you have to get ready, and it's like, okay, go time.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, it's really hard for me there.
We usually ask a lot of questions from the chat room, you know, when we're doing an interview, but the only question that keeps coming up is, will you marry me?
Aww. Let's stop posting that.
let me say something about that, because last night in Tulsa, I had never met Petey Williams before, and I met him last night, and I was teasing. I said, well, you got heat with me. He said, why? I said, man, you were kissing my girl. I said, man, Tracy's my fantasy woman. I said, he said, well, let me show you something. He said, you know what I got for that?
Oh,
he pointed to his eye, and he said, look at this. She hit me and blacked my eye. I said, okay, you got over with me. She's not my fantasy girl. She's a crowbar.
Yeah, I wallowed him pretty good.
He did. He had a black eye, Doc, I swear.
Wow.
He's soft. Don't make them like they used to.
No, I guess not.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know this for a fact, Tracy, but I wouldn't be surprised if Doc might be into a little bit of that.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, you never know, but it's not that kind of show today.
He's the only guy that when we're running down a pay-per-view card that wants to linger and review the bra and panty matches.
Nice.
Hey, if they didn't have fans, it wouldn't be on.
That's right.
Exactly.
That is true.
I bet you miss working. You don't get to work Ring of Honor much anymore, but that was, even though you work in a corner, it was more physical a lot of times, right? Because Gabe's teams include the valets into it sometimes, taking some bumps and stuff, too.
Actually, yeah, Ring of Honor was a really good experience for me, and I managed Punk and the Second City Sink there, and they always included me. I always end up getting my butt kicked somehow. But actually, Gabe was really good at the end of... I was working for Ring of Honor a lot last year, I guess, and he was really pushing the women's division, and we were always having a four-way or some kind of crazy match, and the crowd seemed really receptive to it, and I think they've slowed down that a little bit, I think. I haven't heard a lot about the Ring of Honor girls working a lot, but just their time... I've always seemed to be booked whenever they're running or just kind of miscommunication on getting booked and stuff, but I'd love to get back with them again. I mean, they're a great organization. They're one of the top indies.
They did that one all-girl show here at Heartland, a year ago or so.
Yeah.
And they slacked off on doing those now, or are they still doing a lot of those?
No, not... First of all, anyone that wants to put a bunch of women in a room together is crazy. I don't know whose idea was that. I'm like, I don't know what guy wanted to do this, but usually they end up going out really well. The girls usually end up having a lot of fun after. But a lot of promotions have seemed to have gone downhill right now. And I don't know if it's just because of all the WWE people that have been getting released and they're taking all the bookings or what, but it just seems like everyone I talk to is having a hard time with indie bookings and promoters being true to the word and... Which is unfortunate.
Yeah, that means it's time for a national boom.
Yeah.
That's what that means.
Did you have fun being the cowgirl when you were doing the deal with Dusty?
Oh, of course I did. I mean, to work with Dusty, he's a legend. I mean, why wouldn't I? And, I mean, I got to learn. He's the funniest guy to work with.
Yeah, he's a trip. You think he's crazy now. You should have seen him 30 years ago.
Oh, I can imagine. He was the guy. I mean, the fact that he... The one thing that really stood out with my mind with him is that when he had his very first I'm taking over the booking speech, he actually included the girls. And not that no one else really has, but no one else has really taken us aside from the rest of the group of the guys. You know, he said my girls, and it was just nice to be acknowledged like that. And it made, I think it was Trinity at the time, made us feel very special. And not that we need to feel, you know, we need to be pat on the back every once in a while, but it was just nice that he took his time to acknowledge us. And that was the first time I've really got to speak at TNA. Mm-hmm. It was great. I mean, it was a great learning experience, and I think it also made my character with Matt, or AKA Michael Shane, a lot stronger when we got back together.
Right. Let
me ask you a question. I don't know if you overlapped when you were training, but Gail Kim's a homegirl from Toronto, right?
Yes, she is. Yeah, I trained with her.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. That's I've never met her, but what short run she had in WWE, I was impressed with her work.
She's awesome. We trained together, I think I started in March 2000, and she started December 2000.
All right.
Yeah.
And now we had our first match together. We had our first, you know how it goes, the first few hundred matches together.
Now that Gail Kim's there in TNA, are you going to get in the ring with her?
I definitely hope so. I mean, it's the same thing. We both keep trying to get in the ring before the show just to kind of show, hey, remember we can work kind of thing. But it's always, we're rushed around and doing pre-tapes and everything. It's so hard for us.
Mm-hmm.
But most, like, obviously Scott D'Amore and Terry Taylor and most of the booking committee knows that Gail and I have a past. And it's actually a great past. I mean, we were best buddies traveling on the road. She got signed before I did to WWE. I got signed to TNA. She got released from WWE. I still stayed at TNA, and now she's at TNA. I mean, it's a great story on its own.
Right.
So, I mean, she's an awesome girl. She's one of my favorite girls to work, obviously. And we think what each of us lack, the other one makes up for, kind of thing. And we balance each other out really well.
Yeah. A TNA fan in the chat room has a question. He said, have you heard about the new women's fed called Shimmer that Ring of Honor is involved with?
I've heard the name mentioned, but I haven't really heard anything except that.
That's Prazak, isn't it?
That's Dave Prazak.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes, I have then. I didn't realize that was his inspiration. Yeah, they're running a show. I'm not even sure what's going on with that. I know I can't do their show, though. I'm booked, I think, already. But, yeah, Prazak, I mean, him and Ian Rotten had a great girl show called Volcano Girls.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They had a great show, and then they had a guy's token match, I guess you could say, and they did it really well, and it was a great turnout. The DVD is awesome. If anyone wants, a big fan of women's wrestling, go buy it.
Absolutely. You can get that at smartmarkvideo.com.
Yeah, there you go. A little plug for them.
That's where I got mine. And you know, Les, you know I have Volcano Girls.
Yeah, I know you do, Doc. I know
but
you
it's
do.
Good. I mean, it shows the girls are pretty and sexy, but, you know, we kick butt. So.
And they can wrestle, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It was a good show.
Yeah, as a female, let me get your perspective on this. But my thinking in this day is if, and again, I don't want to embarrass anybody. Obviously, Stacey Keibler is not extremely, I wouldn't say she's not athletic, but she's not destined to be the next women's world champion.
No, not at all.
You know, but anyway, my point being is that if I owned a big company and I were using a lot of ladies, now the ones that weren't adaptable to the athlete, to the wrestling style, to me, if they go out there and it appears that they are clumsy, it takes away some of that sensuality. Now, as a woman, do you feel this? I mean, not that you're attracted to them, but I mean, do you have that same sense of feeling that if you're doing something you're not comfortable with, that takes away from some of your...
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, that's...
That actually hits home to me because I have a really hard time with the whole sex, like the sex thing with me. I grew up on a farm. I grew up, you know, being in overalls and stuff. So when I step into my character... into my dresses and heels and stuff, I think I have a hard time. I think I look awkward. And I look at myself in TV and go, wow, I look horrible. I look like a horse. But I look awful. I'm clumsy. And people say they don't notice it, but in me, because I'm not used to the heels and stuff like that, it's very awkward for me. And I can understand where I totally understand that, and it's true. I mean, no offense to Stacey. I'm sure she's very athletic. She's a cheerleader and dancer and all that, but... when she gets in there and tries to wrestle, it does take away her sexuality. Like, nothing to her. Let her do the pillow matches and stuff like that and the bikini matches because they look amazing. That's what they should be doing if they want to do that. But when they start there, getting there and starting to, like, try to sell and try to do all this other stuff, it makes them look awkward and uncomfortable.
You know,
you're not comfortable, you do look awkward, and I personally know how that is.
Yeah. Let me, from a woman's perspective, you know, I'm not a male chauvinist. Is not necessarily, you know, for women to run the world, and unless of course they're going to support me. But anyway, that's, I get away from the point, though. But what I mean by that is it seems like it's not just one cup, but wrestling in general, in at least modern times, portrays women as bitches, right, and two timers. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, it's almost like you know that's going to be part of the storyline, the first time they introduce a woman. It may not be for 3 months or 3 years,
yeah.
but eventually that's what's going to happen, and I just find that that's just like too much, it's too repetitive, you know?
I totally agree with you there, too, again. And it, to me, I look, but God rest her soul, when I used to watch wrestling, Elizabeth,
yeah.
I had so much heat with her because she was... Because of me being a tomboy, I couldn't understand why she wouldn't get in there, take her shoe off, and hit someone or break someone's eyes. I couldn't understand that, and it really frustrated me. She's the one. She's the reason why I got into wrestling, because I wanted to shake her. I mean, I never got to ever meet her, and I wish to God I got to meet her and tell her thank you for, you know, getting me into this, or not thank her, actually, for getting me into this business. But, and now I, because everyone, Frankie Kazarian said to me once, every girl tries to show so much skin. Every girl thinks to show skin is to be sexy, or to be sexy is to show skin.
Mm-hmm.
No one dresses like a lady anymore. And that's where I start all the time, dressing in dresses, and because no one does dress like that anymore.
Well, you know, I find it, sometimes, I mean, you know, I have a sarcastic sense of humor to start with, but when, in this day and age, when they say there's going to be a bra and panties match, and I'm saying, well, what is there? That's a strip, a quarter of an inch here and a quarter of an inch there, right? I mean,
true.
They're barely wearing anything to begin with, and I agree with, I mean, you know, I think that sometimes total nudity is not as sexy as just the thought, right? In anticipation
yeah, totally
of what
agree.
You're going to see.
No, I agree, and that's why even, like, the whole, like, wearing a short skirt when you get in the ring, you can see up, you know, and it's, to me, it's leave more to the imagination, and I mean, I understand wrestling, sometimes you can't do that all the time. There's always got to be the whole, you know, bra
right.
and panty match and everything. And I dress in, like, shorts and a little top, too. So I'm just as guilty of it too, I guess. But and the same thing is, I want them to keep me with Matt Bentley because we've been going together now for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
or for I guess yeah, almost 2 years now. And if they keep it going, they don't do that anymore. There's no Randy Macho Man forever. There's no, you know what I mean? Like, how long were they together before their first split?
Sure.
And no one will expect that, and everyone expects the turn or the sleeping around or the
yeah. Well, you know, I was just saying that about Booker and Charmel. And, I mean, in real life, they've been together, you know, several years.
Yeah.
But as far as if you're just a wrestling viewer and you don't read the sheets or the internet and stuff, then they actually, in your eyes, have only been together a few months. And yet
yeah.
they're teasing this thing already. And to me, I don't care if it's a woman and a man or if it's two guys in a tag team, you have to establish them.
Yeah.
The camaraderie, the connection, they have to win, they have to do positive things before the negative thing can mean anything.
That's the one thing I think every federation lacks, and indies, whatever they lack, is they sometimes concentrate on one storyline too much and forget about the rest.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to use Matt and I examples again. For a year, Matt would throw me in front of people, would hit me, would, like, almost abuse me, and... No one said anything to me. No one said, why do you put up with it? Why do you love him so much?
Right.
No one ever questioned it. Everyone just thought I was an idiot. No one said, why not leave the abuse? Like, he threw me in. I've taken everyone's finisher. I've caught in everyone's dives. I've been kicked, punched, slapped, whatever, a pile drive. AJ's hit me with every single finisher of his. And no one says, why don't you leave him? Like, reality, people want reality. Reality, why would I be staying with him? Well, why? Because if he has to get kicked or punched or hit, he won't get the goal because he'll be hurt. So I love my guy so much, I'm taking it for him.
Well, you know, to me, I will die with this in my mind, is that I don't care what year it is, 1945 or 2005, if a storyline doesn't parallel reality, then you can't get the people to sink their belief into it.
Nope.
And like you're saying now, and this business wasn't always a heavy male demographic. You know, there was a period of time when, you know, there were a lot of women in the audience, too, and not necessarily coming with their husbands or their boyfriends, but they were fans as well. But then I think it's just, you know, it's important to meet that whole spectrum and these women now, I think, if they're not necessarily insulted, they realize that it's all BS because they wouldn't put up with that, right?
Exactly.
You know, and I think we need to go back a step. I don't mean go back to the old days in any way, shape, or form. You can't ever do that.
No,
but,
unfortunately.
But I think that the basics can go back and make it a little more realistic and pay a little more attention to detail.
That's what I mean, and I think you need to concentrate on the whole story. Like, if you have 2 hours or an hour of TV, you have to the first match is just as important as the last match.
Absolutely.
And the first storyline is just as, and I mean, I think TNA's been really good with explaining stuff like that. I mean, excluding, like, a few things, but, I mean, we're just we're a new company starting out. We're still working out all the
bugs. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just frustrating. It could just take like one little promo to explain everything, or 2 seconds just to explain everything, and like why so and so with this person, or why did all of a sudden like they still haven't explained why Gail was America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious. I mean, I guess it's obvious, but I mean, as you said, as a person just watching, why is this hot Asian girl that can wrestle with these two guys?
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think things, have to kind of, I think that is the biggest problem in the business in general today is crossing your T's and dotting your I's. And I was saying to Doc earlier, I said, whether it's a Hollywood writer or a television series writer, I would think for them to be successful in that particular niche, they have to have an eye for detail as well, because your storyline has to be consistent.
Yeah, I agree.
But yet it seems like they're not, of course you guys don't have any script writers or anything, but I mean like WWE's people don't seem to pay much attention to that.
No, they don't seem to pay much attention about anything.
I saw you take them cookies. Don't tell me.
So, Tracy, you did a movie a couple years ago.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no. Well, if she says that, I have to see the movie.
No.
It's called Zombie Beach Party.
Oh,
What was your experience like over there?
It was fun.
Really?
Were you a zombie?
Well, I was sexy killer zombie Tracy. And I stunt double for the main girl, which was awful because she wore a mask and you couldn't see past her nose. You couldn't look down. And her boots were 3 times too big, and I had to climb the ropes and I had to springboard to the top of the ropes and do a top rope hurricanrana and take this guy off, cut this guy's head off with my legs,
mm-hmm.
with my thighs. But because I was feeling, because I couldn't look down, I was feeling with my feet, and, well, my toes ended, and there was another inch and a half of boot. So I took a big header.
Oh, man.
A few times. It was fun. It was interesting. It was cold. It was in Canada, shot in, like, December. And there's some interesting parts where I'm in.
Something tells me it's not on your resume.
Can I go to my local Blockbuster and rent this?
Not so much.
And if I could, I get the feeling you would tell me I couldn't anyway.
Yeah, I would ban it from you. Do not rent to this man.
Oh, man.
Yeah, anyone listening has a bootleg copy of Zombie
No.
Send it to P.O. Box.
They actually they made a sequel.
Did they really?
Yeah, they actually made a sequel. And I think it's on Bravo or something, or some channel bought it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's awful. Like, to give you a description, I'm in a short, like, PVC skirt. I have my furry boots on. I have a bikini top on, and it's
sounds
December.
Like a good movie.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like that kind of movie. It's in December, and I'm on the ground of a parking lot in Toronto,
mm-hmm.
and I have blood all over me. I'm covered from head to toe in blood, fake blood. My hair is frozen, and I am chewing the inside of a girl's thigh because I am a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a camera behind me and a camera in front of me. So let's just say it was an interesting movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, let's just leave it at that. That was a big high spot in the movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, you wrestled a lot of the top indie girls, like Daisy Hayes, mm-hmm. Mischief, Mickey Knuckles. What are they like to work with?
Awesome. They're great. There's so much talent in it. It's unbelievable the talent that's out there. Whenever someone asks me to name the top female indie talent, I can't. I mean, there's so many of them. There's girls I like working for different reasons. ODB is obviously my very first choice. She's amazing. She's incredible. She's beautiful. She looks like what a wrestler should look like, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I can never say enough good stuff about her. Daisy Hayes is so adorable and so cute and so light and crazy. Absolutely crazy. We'll just do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey Knuckles is also awesome. She's amazing. She just wants to learn. I've never seen a girl train as hard as she did.
Is she a hard hitter?
Yeah, I did have a goosebump on my head. She headbutted me this weekend, and I have a huge goosebag.
She,
She's not when I say hard, she's not, like, unnecessarily stiff. She just, she likes to lay it in, and she's very safe, and I've never ever had an issue with her. I think she's an awesome girl.
Yeah, a lot of people say that she hits like a man.
She does. I mean, she's trained by Ian, and she has wrestled guys most of her life, too.
I'll tell you who throws as good a right hand as any man I've ever seen is Jazz.
Really?
Oh, gosh, she's amazing.
Yeah, she throws a wicked-looking punch, man. First time I saw her when she was OVW, they used to, when we did our TV down there on Sundays, Jimmy and Danny had thrown one of their, a couple of their kids in on a dark match, you know, as a warm-up or something, or at intermission, we were doing something with tape, and she worked one of those. I had never seen her work before. I hadn't had a chance to see her in ECW. And I saw her throw that right hand, and I said, oh, my God. I said, will you come up and teach some of my guys how to throw a punch? I mean, really, she throws a better punch than half the damn kids, the guys.
She's an awesome worker, too. She makes everything look amazing, but she's so light, and she's incredible backstage. And I've got a chance to work with her a few times at Cyberspace in New Jersey, and she's her, April Hunter, Daisy, ODB, I can't name, like, Lacey. I can't name enough girls that are talented and deserve a shot.
April's crazy.
Just don't put you all in the same room, right?
Actually, you know what? The funny thing is, I've never had... We went to a show in Texas, and there was, like, Missy Hyatt, Francine, Tammy, Lollipop, myself, Chrissy Ricci, ODB. There was, like, 50 girls, and we had the best time. And there could have been a very, like, Jazz was there. It could have very well been a possibility of, like, cattiness, and because there's so many girls in different stages of their career.
Right.
And we took a group picture, and it's like, when you look at it, it's like, we could have had a total, like, cat fight, or, and just because everyone, the stages and the career and stuff like that, it was the best time we've ever had. Like, it was actually, Chris Candido was there. It was the weekend that he passed away, before he passed away, and he's like, I can't believe how you women get along. He goes, I'm going to bed. You girls are crazy. And he went to bed.
Did you get a chance to get to know Chris pretty well?
I did, actually. He's awesome. When I was doing a lot of Ian shows, I got to know him really well.
He's a good kid. When he first came to Smokey, you know, 12 years ago or so, I guess it was, that, you know, we've been friends all that much time. And yeah, he's just a great, and nobody had more of a passion for this business than he did, I don't think.
Yeah.
Him and when he came to TNA, it was just kind of like the locker room so funny that everything just changed, and it kind of like he came in the right time and kind of uplifted everyone.
Right.
And his match he had debut match was with AJ, and it was incredible. And I think everyone was so positive and so happy to see him there, and I just got to know him because if it wasn't for Tammy, none of the girls would be where we are. I don't care what anyone says. Tammy, Elizabeth, all those girls, we would not be where we are today. Tammy has better timing than most guys. She knows more about this business than most guys do. She's incredible. And I always ask Chris about her. I always ask how she was doing, if she's going to get back in, what's going on. And we just kind of clicked. And I still can't believe he's gone. And
yeah, me too.
It seems unfair.
I want to take a question from the chat room. TNA fan says, speaking of showing skin, were you shocked at the response? Les, let me ask the question.
I'm letting you ask the question.
Were you shocked at the response of the picture ad that you did for TNA on the front of your website?
I haven't really heard anything about it.
Really?
I mean, it was actually my idea. I was, I like thinking like that. I like advertising and stuff like that. And I said, hey, the company's called TNA.
Mm-hmm.
And as of that moment, I was the only TNA there. And I just said, my poor photographer, he's very shy around girls.
No.
I'm like, hey, take a picture of this. And it was just one of those, we were in the makeup room, and it took 2 seconds, and I don't even know if TNA used it. I know I put it on the front of my website, but I just thought it was a smart advertisement.
Mm-hmm.
I guess TNA on Spike TV, you got guys that are going to go drinking at 11 o'clock at night. Or, like, little, like, you know, kids that are kind of hitting that age, you know? And why not? It's a perfect demographic for me to do this.
All right. What are your views on why all these good female wrestlers are not on TV?
Not enough time.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Just not enough time. And WWE is so... I mean, I would say I still watch WWE. I still support them because they are a competition and... unique competition to make the world go around. WWE, unfortunately, has this mindset of who they tell people they like.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you know, the fans all listen. And that's why I think Gail Kim didn't get over as she should have there, or Victoria doesn't get over like she should there, because you're Americans are supposed to like blonde hair, blue eyes. That's it. Blonde hair, blue eyes, big boobs, small waist.
Yeah.
And that's all they should like. I mean, the only girls that have... I mean, even Lita, when she was big, she was never as big as Trish. Or she was never big as Sable. Or she was never big as, you know, Sunny or anyone. They've always been blonde bombshells.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what WWE thinks works. And they don't have... They don't realize there's, like, people like different things.
I also noticed... Have you noticed this, too, that usually the brunettes are the heels?
Yeah.
It's
well,
true.
The white hats and the dark hats and the black hats, right, kind of thing.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true. And the thing is, when Gail, to me, I think Gail's like the sexiest girl I know. And in Canada, she's huge.
Mm-hmm.
But when you came to the States, it's like people are like, yeah, she's okay. And it's like, are you looking at the same thing I'm looking at?
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating because you're not, you know, the blonde typical... You know, and I even look ethnic, so people think, you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
TNA seem to have the brunettes, and WWE seem to have the blondes.
Right.
So, I mean, I think Victoria and all those girls and Lita just are beautiful as Trish and all the other girls, but it's because Vince has told the American fans, you must like blonde hair, blue eyes, or blonde hair, brown eyes, whatever, big boobs, small waist.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just not, I don't know, it's not everyone likes it.
So you got your big match coming up. Well, not match, but you're going to be there, of course, at Bound for Glory next weekend.
Yep, the X, Ultimate X.
Yes.
The last time I was involved in this, AJ Pele kicked me, so.
We'll have to see what happens this time.
Quit giving these guys taters, will you, Tracy?
Yeah.
Sorry?
Just think what your reputation will be if you put four or five of these guys on the disabled list.
Well, if they even try to kiss me again, they might get a left hand.
Yeah.
Remember, it's coming from the left.
Yeah. Tracy, I want to thank you for being on the show. We're running out of time. We got to get cutting out of here.
Hey, girl.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you're going to be up this way, let me know. I'd love to come see you.
I will for sure. I miss you.
I miss you too, darling.
Okay.
Doc, don't you say a damn word.
Okay.
Tracy, take care of yourself, darling. God bless.
Thank you. God bless, guys.
Bye-bye, Tracy. Bye. Tracy Brooks here on Wrestling Weekly, guys. Well, it's about that time, Les. Got to be cutting out of here, friend of friends.
All right, see, you said a big shout-out to your girl Missy at the top, and see, so I got my girl, too, so the hell with you, Doc. Well, man, I'm out of here. I haven't unpacked everything for my trip to Tulsa yet.
Wow.
We got a surprise for next week. You got somebody lined up?
We're gonna give everybody a surprise.
All right.
Check out the website, WrestlingWeekly.com, all week. See who our next guests are going to be next week.
All right. I thought we had a good show. We had a good time tonight, and hope everybody enjoyed it. And, Doc, I'll catch you later.
All righty. Check out what Les is up to every week at LesThatcher.com and EPWT.com. Thanks to WrestleTalk Radio for their help tonight.
And TracyBrooks.com. We didn't forget to plug Tracy's.
Yes, and TracyBrooks.com. Got to check that out, too. Also, for all your wrestling needs, it's ObsessedWithWrestling.com. We're going to see you guys next week from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We're out of here, folks. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Wrestling Weekly. Please join us again next Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern right here on WrestlingWeekly.com.